you're about to make a trade. Which you do you listen to? Is it, get optioning those options? Or let's do a little research. Learn more at finra.org/tradesmart.
Marshall's buyers are hustling hard to get amazing new gifts into stores, right up to the last minute. Like a designer perfume for that friend who never RSVP'd. Wishlist topping toys for her kids who came too. Mm-hmm. Belgian chocolates for the neighbor. A cozy scarf for your boss. And a wool jacket for your husband that you definitely did not almost forget. Marshalls. We get the deals. You get the good stuff. Even at the last minute. Whew. Find a Marshalls near you.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox. Welcome to the award-winning FCPA Compliance Report, the oldest podcast in compliance. Today, I begin a special four-part series of webinars I did with representatives from Diligent. These webinars are a great way for us to end 2025 and look into 2026. Over this four-part series, we'll look at due diligence, FCPA, export control, and sanctions under the Trump administration. I know you will get a lot out of this four-part podcast series in December, so I hope you'll listen to the entire series. Today I'm joined by Nicole Deschino, and we take a look at AI into 2026 and beyond. Each of these podcasts come in at just under an hour.
We are thrilled, both Nicole and I are thrilled to be with you today because we want to talk about one of our joint favorite topics. And that's AI governance, compliance, and modern GRC. Nicole, you want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. So hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. I am Nicole Deschino. I am a principal compliance services consultant in the Spark Compliance group at Diligent. What that means is that I help in-house compliance and ethics professionals develop and maintain their compliance and ethics programs. We do everything from risk assessment to training development to compliance program assessment. My personal favorite work, as you're going to hear a lot about today, is training and communications development. And I have spent all of 2025 deep in a professional goal of developing my skills in both using AI and helping folks do AI governance. As a tiny bit more background, by training, I am an attorney. I started my life as a big firm lawyer in New York, doing a mix of white collar defense and civil litigation, and moved into the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act litigation space, and then found my way to compliance. So I've been with Spark for about 6 years now, and Diligent since we were acquired last February. Glad to have you all with us.
So next slide, please. And I'm Tom Fox. I work with Diligent on helping get out some of the great messages they have. And if we could go to the next slide. Why I was so excited to do this with Nicole is she is not only a subject matter expert on the tools from AI, but she and I both agree around the need for governance. And the more I study AI, the more I see the need for governance as a part of your overall structure for AI. And if you don't have governance, that's really where you're going to get into trouble. So this is our agenda for today. So this is what we'll be going through. And if we could have the next slide, please. Okay, so I think there are going to be some real opportunities, obviously, here. I think that compliance has to up our game. And when I say up our game, I mean that we are going to have to move at the speed of business going forward. And that's going to require us to embrace these tools and utilize them to do compliance going forward. I'm currently at the annual ACI, FCPA, and Global Anti-Corruption Conference, and it's clear to me that what's at stake for the compliance professional is if, under this administration and perhaps going forward, the enforcement focus is going to change, and that we as a compliance profession need to up our game so that we stay relevant. And then just sort of why, or the last point is, are you using AI by, with, or for? And by that, are you using AI to give you ideas for you to implement in your program? Are you using AI as a partner in some fashion going forward? And then finally, are you just using AI to do work for you? So that's going to be one of the themes that we have going forward. Nicole, you want to jump in with any broad picture points at this point?
Yep, absolutely. So I agree with Tom. I think that this is really an area where we have to be paying attention on really a daily basis at this point, or we are going to be in a place where we can't get caught up. So I want to share a seemingly unrelated AI issue that I'm having with you that I think really illustrates why we need to be constantly thinking about this in our profession. And that is in my outside life. In addition to my professional life, I am a mom of three, and I've got two kids right now who are at an elementary school in Brooklyn, New York. And last year, our Department of Education gave us the opportunity to use some AI tools within our school system. And without talking with parents, our administration decided to start using an AI-based reading tutor for the kids who are in second through fifth grade. And by an AI-based reading tutor, they are using a AI, generative AI tool that records their voices and teaches them whether they are speaking appropriately. So I have now been locked in a year-long battle with a lot of other parents about the dangers of using generative AI, particularly with children, particularly in the classroom, but also in a position where it is recording biometric data of these kids every day. And one of the big tricks with this reading tutor is the governance structure is unclear. So according to the DOE, we found a year in, they actually have an agreement that the recordings can't be used to train the model, but we haven't seen the agreement and we have lots of other questions, right? Are those recordings being used in other ways? Can they be used to fine-tune the model, not train the model? What happens to that data? How long is it saved? Is it ephemeral? Is it saved for 3 years? And this all is distressing when it's your kids in the public school. But I bring it up because it's worth us thinking about, especially as we use AI, even for simple things like recording this webinar that we're on now, recording your regular calls. We are all the time in our businesses now taking for granted seemingly innocuous AI platforms that do carry a lot of risk and a lot of conversation points. And what I've learned through this school process is that most people aren't thinking about the AI governance aspects. Very smart people haven't thought through the privacy concerns, the data concerns, and then also just the actual concerns about using AI, which is still complicated in its infancy, to fill these needs. So as we work today, I'll be translating that situation for you to what's happening within your own organizations. Where are we depending on AI that we don't fully understand and not asking the right questions? And how can we help our organizations use AI effectively? Because we'll get to this later, but we're not getting away from that, but also help them think through the potential pitfalls.
All right. What a great way to frame the issues we're going to talk about today. Thank you. Can we move to the next slide, Erin? So why don't we move to the next slide, since this was a question. Or did you want us to maybe talk about some of these? Okay, when we originally designed this, we're going to have some polling questions, and we can't do that now. So this really sort of articulates, we just wanted to get a sense of where folks were in their own corporate AI journey. And so if you could just maybe drop into the chat, 1, 2, 3, or 4, and we'll do it sort of the old-fashioned way by adding it up. Nicole, and while we're getting people to do this, Maybe you could talk to us about the breadth and scope of what you see with formerly Spark, now Diligent, customers in this journey. And how do you, if someone's just starting out, maybe how do you counsel them going forward?
Absolutely. So what I would say is we have clients who are all over this area, but I think most of us are much closer to 2, 3, or even 4 than we realize. So what I think is your employees are using AI, whether they're using AI with your permission, whether they're using AI with your guidance, whether it's formally built into your system, we should all assume that at least someone in our organization is at level 3. And that the first step is really trying to understand how people are currently using AI within your organization, even if it's informally.
That's a great point. And let me just reemphasize that even if you don't have a corporate policy, even if your company hasn't embraced it, probably your employees are. And even if your employees are not, they may be facing the same situation Nicole is around her kids. Ubiquitousness of this tool and this product, I think, are something that all compliance officers need to be cognizant of. Aaron, could we move to the slide which is entitled, We Need to Understand the Tools Available? And Nicole, maybe you could walk us through this.
Yep, absolutely. So this is, I've been thinking a lot about this, and I have been using the metaphor a lot of don't be the movie industry revolting against the VHS technology. So I'm an 80s baby and was born into the era of VHS, but I know there was a time where when home movies were becoming a thing, the movie industry really doubled down and tried to stop this technology. They were afraid of the consequences that it was going to have for the industry. They were afraid of what it would do to the money that they were making from in-theater films. And I think it's a great example because we now know, right, a short, I guess not that short, 40 years later, we are not only our VHS players out of the loop, we've moved way past that to an entirely different model of giving the movies out to the public, of that distribution. And so I think that we really have to, it doesn't matter if you like AI at this point, and it doesn't matter if you think AI is doing good or harm. AI is, it just is a part of how we are doing business at this point. And so I think the first step for any of us who are looking at AI governance is to look at our own knowledge and understanding of these tools. And the only way that you're truly going to understand AI is to use it. Even if you don't think that it's appropriate for your job or your personal life, you just have to use it, because otherwise you're going to be the principal at my school who hasn't used it and doesn't understand what the issues are. And I think that's really problematic when you're trying to build the governance structure. So the first step that I tell all of my clients who are looking at AI governance is to look at where AI is in their workflows and to look for opportunities to use it. So ChatGPT and Copilot are some of my favorite brainstorming partners. I am looking at ways to use AI regularly in my private life. I've dabbled with video creation terribly, not very good at that one. And I really encourage everyone to be doing the same, because that's the way to truly understand this technology is to start using it.
Aaron, can we go to the next slide? And Nicole, with this slide, we begin, or you begin, to talk to us about how you can make these assessments to even determine where you are. So can I just ask you to just pick really up on that last point? You've now dabbled in it. You're the CCO or you're the compliance professional, and you've been assigned this task. Now, how do you figure out how it's being used in your company?
Absolutely. So this is where your skill set is totally perfectly matched for doing AI. If you are a compliance professional, you have done this before. This can feel intimidating and different because it is in different areas of our organization, but we know how to do risk assessments. So what you are going to start with is trying to understand the current state of your organization. The way that I suggest that you do that is either through a formal risk assessment, where you're looking formally at AI risk, but you can also start well before that. Start talking to your people in different segments of your business and ask them. Make it a safe environment. Make sure they know that you don't have your compliance police hat on, and understand, how are you using AI? Make sure that you get below the level of explaining the tools that they're using that you've already authorized. Are there any other ways that you use AI? Do you use your personal ChatGPT account to do work related to work? Are you creating things for your graphics using AI? Do you use an AI note taker? Make sure that you get that information and know that it's likely to vary across your business. So I recently hosted a conversation about AI governance with a group of compliance professionals at a conglomerate. And we had everyone from engineers to lawyers on the phone. And the lawyers wanted nothing to do with AI. And the engineers were like, y'all, we have these tools that can make our life and business better. Why are you trying to take them away from us? So make sure you're talking across the organization so that you can understand what is actually happening. So that's the first step. Then the next step is to consider doing this formal risk assessment. And this is not going to be that different than what you would do if you were doing any other kind of compliance risk assessment, right? You're going to be looking at impact, likelihood, and vulnerability, trying to look across the business, see where AI is being used, and see what risks that is posing and how likely they are to happen. And the risks are significant. And you've heard these all at some point or other, but they're worth noting. AI can be very biased and can make bad decisions based on that bias. So be really aware of that. Obviously, the privacy issues that we're talking about. There was a question in the chat about my school example about consent, which is relevant in the school example, which is, yes, I would say under the New York State privacy laws, the parents should have to give consent for these video recordings. But that's been unclear in the back and forth, but you're likely in similar positions. If you're in a two-party recording state, do people have to be consenting at the beginning of their conversation that something is being recorded by AI, right? There's other laws and regulations that are impacted here. Your security risks obviously are there. How are your vendors? How are your employees storing the information? And what are people sharing with the AI? Do they understand that they shouldn't be putting confidential business information, sensitive information? Do they understand that a recording of themselves is private information, right? Those sorts of things. Do they understand? The litigation risks is obviously significant. We're already seeing cases come up here. IP leakage, and then my favorite, hallucinations. And this is an interesting risk to me because it's a bit different than some of the legal heavy risk. But the risk you run with folks using AI, if they aren't knowledgeable about it, is AI often gets things really wrong. And the phrase that people like to use is that it hallucinates. So I once had it tell me very seriously that Target had an anti-corruption settlement in 2022, which is just not true. And it told me three different times that Target had a settlement, which I knew because I'm a subject matter expert. But those sorts of things are why you really need to know how people are using this so that you know what you need to educate them about.
So I would just like to add this list that Nicole has given us. They may appear to be something different than you normally think of as a risk, but they're risks. And that's what we do in compliance. We manage risk. Now, in anti-corruption compliance, we're trying to manage a corruption risk, AML, export control, you name the type of compliance we're in, but they're just risks. And if you can identify risk and then you can assess that risk, then you can begin to put a risk management strategy in place and move to what Nicole and Spark do, which is communications and training. on that. If you just think of these as risks, then you can begin, I think, to get a pretty good handle on this and see how, in your role as a compliance professional, you can move towards managing these risks. Can we go to the next slide, please, Aaron? All right. So, Nicole, how do we think through educating your teams on the tools to use?
So this is my favorite part. As I've shared, I like training and communications. We've been using the phrase that diligent compliance education, right? So your whole picture of compliance education. And I think that the AI area is such a neat area to be doing this in because lots of us are starting from scratch. So the first thing that I would recommend doing is to understand what you are asking of your people. And that the best way to do that is to draft a responsible use of AI policy. What drafting that policy is going to force you to do is to really analyze what your risk tolerance is and how you want your employees to act. And that's the first step here, because using AI is both beneficial and risky. And for the most part, during this part of the conversation, we've been talking about using AI internally. These discussions become even more intense if you are offering products like Diligent does that incorporate AI into the products that you are taking to market. That is a whole deeper level of risk analysis. But if you're focusing on how you're using AI within your organization, the first thing that you need to do is to get stakeholders involved. And you'll know who those are in your organization. It really varies. But at the table will likely need to be folks from your IT security department, definitely folks from your executive leadership team, legal, compliance, and then folks from the different areas of your business so that you can understand those risk tolerances, so that you can know if you've got a bunch of engineers who are saying, these tools are available, why won't you let us use them? This is silly. Or if you have a bunch of lawyers who are so afraid about the document retention ramifications of AI note takers that they can't even get on board with an AI note taker. And that's a risk decision. It's not going to be the same for every company. So establish your risk and write your policy. There's lots of examples out there. This does not need to be a complicated policy. It can be the basics of how you want people to behave, whether you want to limit them to what types of AI they are using. Can they use their personal ChatGPT? Do you need to tell them not to? What information can they enter? Should they only be using Copilot? These are the types of things that you're doing in the policy. Once you have that policy established, then it becomes time to educate your folks on that policy. And that is by using different comprehension aids, infographics, training, anything of that sort that's going to tell your people how to use AI. We're seeing a lot of people put AI sections into their codes of conduct now so that it's really at the top level. And we're also seeing it very commonly as a module in modular code of conduct training. But begin the conversation. You might not be ready to put this into your code. You might not have fully established what you're doing, but start talking to your employees about how to use AI safely.
I certainly recognize the subject matter of this webinar, but I have to shout out to Nicole for one thing she said, and I want you to take this away, perhaps as number two, and that's compliance education. Diligent came up with that term earlier this year. I think it is absolutely brilliant, and here's why. In the original formulation of the 10 hallmarks of an effective compliance program, we had training evolved to training and communications. Then people like Nicole and her colleagues at Diligent took a step back and said, this doesn't even really cover what we're doing because we're educating. And when you begin to think of this as education, you, in my mind, see so many other possibilities of how you can communicate information and educate your workforce. It can be a 30-second blurb. It can be a 3-minute video. It can be a written email. It can be live and in person. It just, to me, it really encapsulates, if that's the right word, everything we've been trying to do about getting the information to your employees. And one of the questions we've had come in is, elaborate how compliance can really up their game. I see compliance education as a clear way for us to do that using AI. So if an employee is going overseas, they automatically get an email. Now they get a 30 to 60 second information piece, a reminder of your policy on facilitation payments, a reminder of who to call if you get essentially extorted at the border, or they want to give you a shot because your shot card is insufficient, or they claim it is. And you can communicate that information to a person right before they're traveling, so it's fresh of mind. And AI can pick from a suite of communications tools. And I think, in my mind, that's one of the more exciting things that AI can do. But I really want you to leave this webinar thinking about not training in comms, but compliance education, because I think it really encapsulates everything that we as a profession are trying to use to help our employees or our customers. So shout out to Nicole for saying compliance education. Thank you.
Tom, I appreciate that. And I'll jump in for just a minute, even though it isn't the primary topic, because I do think it's relevant. Not to toot my own horn, but toot, I actually have been using compliance education as the phrase for several years now. And it is exactly what Tom is saying, is we tend to, as compliance professionals, think about these things in their own little silos, partly because the Department of Justice set us up to think that way back in 2012 when they put out their FCPA guidance. But I think the reason that this concept is actually so relevant to what we're talking about today is if you step back and think of your role as a compliance professional, I think of it as twofold. One is you are an educator. Your job is to educate the people within the business about what they need to do to be able to follow the company's values and do business ethically. And two, it's that you're an ambassador. So the most important thing you're doing anytime you're out there talking about compliance, or anytime you're putting anything into the organization, your training, your comms, your infographics, really, one of your most important roles is not to irritate people and make them dislike you, because we need people to come to us and tell us when something is a problem. So there are plenty of organizations within each company that can get picked on: HR, finance, audit. People don't like them. They don't like the control function. They don't want to be bothered by them. And compliance can easily slip into that role. And so if you see yourself as an educator, which means that you're giving people enough information to do their jobs, but not overwhelming them, and an ambassador, which means you're being respectful of their time, that's when you're going to see that people not only know what they need to do, but when they're going to be able to call you and tell you they have a problem, and not where they're going to avoid you because you're an irritation.
Brilliant. Aaron, could we go to our next slide, please? So now we get to the implementation of controls and processes. And years ago, I finally understood the role of internal control, so I'm really excited to geek out on this. Can you start us on our geek journey through controls and processes, Nicole?
Yep, absolutely. So I think the most important thing on this page is the human in the loop. The human in the loop is really critical in AI. So what we are seeing now is that people really are wanting, we see how much potential there is here with AI, and people really want to use it. And often they want to use it to replace human labor. And what we're finding is that is dangerous, because AI is imperfect, one. Two, it doesn't actually speak English or any other human language. It is really taking what we're putting in natural language, turning it into code, using things based on predictability to give us back something that looks like human language, right? And so it really can get things very wrong. And so the most important thing you can do from a control process is to make sure that there are humans involved in any AI process that you're doing. The next is you need to actually be doing more traditional control functions. And this is where you're going to have to lean on your security folks and your tech folks. I feel like there are probably very few people who are fully embedded in a compliance and ethics function who also have the skill set to do this sort of model validation, testing, sign off. This is where you're going to have to partner with people in the business who understand this tech on a level that I know I will never get to, so that they can tell you, are these models protecting our data? Are these models hallucinating in a way that is going to do damage? Are these models something that is safe for us to use? So this is really where you need to be regularly testing those models that you're using, regularly understanding what's happening. And that's going to be happening on your security side of things. And then there's the change management aspect, which comes back to us, right? So how are you handling things as they change? ChatGPT, since I've started using it regularly a year ago, has gone through 3 upgrades. So do you have a system in place? Do you have controls in place to make sure when your tools change that you understand what has actually changed? And then finally, the documentation. As a consultant, setting aside my sort of training in comms brain, and as a compliance consultant, one of the conversations I have the most frequently with my clients is it often doesn't matter what you decide, but it really matters that you explain why you decided it. So we are making risk-based decisions. You may have a high risk tolerance for using new emerging AI technology, but you need to treat that like any other critical business or compliance decision and explain, what do you know and why did you make your decision? Write it down, document it. So if 2 years from now you have a problem, you can say, yes, we thought about these issues and we made a risk-based decision based on A, B, and C, and here's where we ended up. That may not get you fully out of trouble if you have a problem, but it's going to go a long way. And I think you can treat it like any other legal risk. We don't have all the governance tools that we need. The same was true with the FCPA in 2012, right? People felt like they didn't understand what the government wanted of them. So if you ever don't fully understand a risk, the best thing to do is make a risk-based decision and explain at the time in writing why you made that decision.
Anyone who has ever heard me speak knows that my mantra is document. And that's just what Nicole said. If I can drop back to FCPA cases, there's never been an enforcement action for someone making the wrong decision that was documented. There is no CCO has ever been charged with negligence because they made the wrong decision. Companies got into trouble because they either didn't have a process or they didn't document and they couldn't explain what they did. And so that last point, what do we know and decide at the time? Obviously, those are critical decisions, but the documentation is the most important because, once again, in a regulator's eyes, if you didn't document it, it never happened. And so document that. We're not saying you have to be right. We're not saying you have to be perfect. What we're saying is you have to have a process. You have to follow that, and you've documented that. That's my mantra for this webinar. Can we go to the next slide, please, Aaron? So roles and responsibilities, and now next slide. And this is where hopefully we'll have a little more fulsome discussion, because I'm really intrigued, Nicole, about your thoughts on board and committee oversight. Before I tell you mine, why don't you just take off and either if you find or think one's best, or is it a case by case or company by company really analysis, or is there a sort of a suite that we can have a conversation about, a suite of potential solutions here for oversight?
Absolutely. So I think this is really an interesting area and an area where I can't help but lawyer and say, it depends. I don't think there is a right answer here. What I do think is that you need oversight in this area and you should be getting started now. So I think this is an area where what we are really seeing is some companies have been thinking about AI, particularly those who have been developing products for market that include AI. They're thinking really hard about this topic and they're talking about the governance and they're having the board do oversight in this area or putting the risk-based oversight in places like the risk or audit or tech committee. My preference here would be similar to what I said about the policy development, and that is the more that you can get at the board level, the subject matter expertise in the cross-functional areas that come up here, the more people at the at your board level who understand the tech perspective, the legal privacy perspective, the risk perspective, the more able you are going to be to have the board really, truly overseeing this risk. So that's going to look different on every board, but that's where I suggest that our clients start, is look at your board makeup and think about, if we were going to work with our current board, who would be able to give us this mix of expertise that would allow us to truly understand what we're doing going forward? And then how can we structure the oversight that way? And what you may find is that you don't have the expertise that you need on your board to be able to really oversee this risk. And then that can go into your board planning for future years and as you're looking for new directors to really get this risk. Because I think it is going to be unlikely that one person or even two is going to have the variety of information you need to oversee this so completely. Tom, I'm super curious to know what you think.
Before we get there, I want to maybe suggest that the compliance profession, when it came to things like anti-bribery, anti-corruption, had two functions to the board. One, you had to report to the board, usually in a quarterly board meeting, perhaps more often to an audit or compliance committee. But part two was you actually had to teach the board how to oversee you. So you had to educate the board on what their obligations were and how they could oversee you. And then you would actually report to them. So I wanted to use that as an introduction to ask you, Nicole, how can a compliance professional help think through educating a board on their oversight role? Not how do they actually oversee you, but how do you teach them that, or how do you communicate that to them?
So I think the first answer is get in front of them. Get in front of them as much as you can so that you can be talking about this topic and about how it is. I think it's really similar to the conversation we're having today, is explaining the risk and understanding that there is going to be such a variety of knowledge even within the business community. So I think this risk is really interesting, Tom, because I think it is different than a lot of the compliance risks that we are used to dealing with. So in the compliance space, I think we often find that we can get people to listen to us when there are major financial consequences or potential consequences to the individuals, particularly when there's potential consequences to the board. I think that's why Tom and I both sort of grew up in this space in the area of in the era of early strong FCPA enforcement. And I think there was a huge shift in the compliance space in how much board time compliance was getting because there was so much regulation and government enforcement in the FCPA space, and boards understand the language of million-billion-dollar settlements. So your challenge here is that we aren't at that place where this is being so heavily regulated that you can do one-to-one. If you do this thing, you're going to get sued by the government and you're going to have a $1 million fine. So I think the first is really stepping back and treating it as an educational conversation to help people understand the variety of risk and why it requires their oversight in the first place.
To answer the question you posed to me, Nicole, I would advocate this being a part of the risk committee, because one of the things I'm trying to articulate about the compliance use of AI is we need to not think about a siloed anti-bribery, anti-corruption, AML, export control, safety, privacy, whatever it may be, and think of a holistic risk approach. And you're absolutely right. This is a new or different set of risks. And so I would try to put a committee in place that had the ability, both from a technical side and perhaps a management side, to think about risk and think about the risk parameters, where your company is comfortable with in terms of risk, and then set that standard and then have the either management or the individual departments implement risk management around that. I'm really trying to help, or at least advocate, let's have a more comprehensive risk committee going forward. Can we now, Nicole, move from the board level to the management level? And what do you see as some of the governance structures or ideas that we could put in place at the management and here at senior management level?
Yep, absolutely. So I love governance structures at the management level because I think in a lot of ways they're actually easier to put together than the board. And I would start it as soon as possible, putting together a cross-functional AI governance committee. And I think that we talked about that group of people when we were talking about the policies. And I think that's really going to vary based on who is in your organization and who is interested in this topic. I would open it up fairly broadly because I think that you may find individuals who are knowledgeable about AI and passionate about AI in strange positions that might not be who you're looking for, and I would use them. And then I would look at getting people from your legal, compliance, IT, data science, HR, business leaders, everyone who might be touching this from all these different angles together. Even if you can get a quarterly meeting on the calendar where you're starting to have these conversations about what is our risk tolerance level from AI, how are people currently using it, and are we comfortable with that? You'll be in a much better decision-making process when issues come up if you've already started having these cross-functional conversations about what your beliefs, company risk tolerance, and beliefs are about this, because your decision isn't going to be the same as diligence decision, isn't going to be the same as another company's decision. And so if you don't know what your principles are, you're going to have a very hard time deciding if you should greenlight the AI note taker or green light building the AI into your company, your outward facing product.
There's one other reason I advocate exactly what Nicole has just described. And once again, it comes from my more ABC background, where a company I was with who had gone through an FCPA enforcement action put together a cross-functional management team around compliance. And in that case, it was third parties. But in addition to the specific work they did overseeing that issue, it communicated to the company, this is important to us. This is so important. We're going to have a cross-functional team of EVPs, our executive vice presidents, meeting twice a month on this issue. And that was a nonverbal communication to the rest of the company of how important that is. And I think that same sort of communication message would get out to employees that if there's a management committee dedicated to AI that can be used as both a resource and a go-to group, that is going to give employees a greater comfort in whatever direction the company might choose going forward. I think it's a great way to send a message of this is important to us, and this is how we are going to support you. Now, can we go down to our level of compliance and ethics? And hopefully for the folks on this webinar, this will be some of the things that they can do. So where can we start with at this point, Nicole?
This is so fun. This is my favorite part, because now we get into where we can really help our employees understand and create change. So our job as compliance and ethics educators is to translate those high-level principles into practiced rules and training. So once you have an idea what your company's risk tolerance is, you can start talking to people about it. And you don't have to have one opinion on this. You can change your mind, and it will evolve as AI is evolving. But what I suggest is taking a look at your broad compliance education plan for the year. If you don't have one, I suggest making one. And that compliance education framework should look at what do I need to teach my employees on an annual basis about compliance? What does everyone need to know? What do my managers need to know? What do my risk-based, role-based groups need to know? So your sales folks are probably going to need different information from a compliance standpoint than your IT folks. And so look at AI in terms of what you're already doing in training and communications and see where you can start educating people. So this really can be as simple as adding 2 minutes to your code of conduct training every year. I think that's a great place to start because it is often one of the trainings that everyone in the company is getting. So look for those opportunities and start talking to people about AI. Tell them what AI is. Come up with a 2 to 3 sentence at an eighth grade level basic policy. We at Diligent believe that AI is the way of the future, but that we must use it in a way that protects our business information. That means only using caution when entering information. This is not actually Diligent's AI policy, but this doesn't have to be complicated, right? What is your statement of your principle and what does that mean for your employees? If you do have specific rules, tell them to your employees. An infographic that has do's and don'ts, right? Do not put company financial information into ChatGPT. Do use Copilot, right? Those types of things are really helpful and don't have to be that complicated. You can post these on your intranet. You can do posters. You can do infographics. There's a lot of different ways to do this. And then the second part is to start integrating this into your investigations work. So as you educate your population about AI and the risks that it poses and how to use it safely, what you should be seeing is some reports about people not following those rules or questions about whether something is an acceptable use of AI. Once you start seeing those issues coming into your hotline, you know that you've done your communication job effectively because people understand that it's a risk that they should be paying attention to. So prepare yourself. Once you start educating, prepare yourself to do the second part, which is to investigate and to be able to respond accordingly. That might mean looking at adding some issue tags to your reporting system so that you have a way to track when AI is coming up in internal reports. It might look like asking questions during the investigations, preparing your investigators to be able to talk about this topic, and then also the discipline frameworks. What are you doing if someone is not following your AI policies? And how are you really getting to when you are looking at the root cause analysis for your issues? Where is AI coming up and how are you responding?
Aaron, we've got about 5 minutes left, so could we go to our next slide? Simple rules of the road. And this was some of the things that I think both Nicole and I thought was important to just at least to mention. So you want to start off here, Nicole?
Yep, absolutely. So these are things that seem obvious, but going back to our school example, I had people in the comments here immediately stating the problems, right? With have you signed consent on behalf of those kids? Are there privacy issues? We're thinking about these issues. So things seem very simple to us often. What I have found through our AI reading tutor is that when I start talking about the fact that letting it record a child's voice is taking their biometric data, these parents who haven't thought about it this way, their eyes get really big. I didn't think about that. I didn't think about how that would be. I talk about the 23andMe case and how people are selling our private data. People aren't thinking about this the same way you're thinking about this. So start very simple. People need to know and understand that they shouldn't be pasting confidential or personal data into public tools. It's really just that simple. And that is something that people often don't know. So give them examples. Talk to them on a level that it isn't necessarily technical, right? Don't, put your address into AI. Don't put the company's personal information. Don't put our financial information. Anonymize the things you're putting in to the extent that makes sense or use internal systems. Using only approved AI tools for work is something I think you should be encouraging. It's also something that I would assume that your employees aren't necessarily going to follow. So act accordingly. People are going to be pulling up their own phones and searching on ChatGPT. It's like assuming people aren't going to use the internet on their phones. Let them understand both sets of rules while arguing for the approved AI tools for work. The same thing there goes for giving the appropriate tools if you think people are really going to use them. So Diligent records most of its internal, not all, but a lot of its internal calls. I personally wouldn't record my internal calls, but it's our company culture to do. So if you know your people have a company culture where they're going to be doing this, give them the right tools to do it safely. The next is making sure your employees understand that they should never be using AI content without reviewing it first. We talked about the human in the loop. Don't make the mistake of putting Target's FCPA settlement into your presentation on FCPA settlements because you didn't check whether it was right. Teach your employees to check for links, to follow the links, and then to do their own research before deciding that something they've done in AI is accurate. The same with bias and gut check outputs. So especially if you're using this to do hiring, promotion, and discipline, AI is biased. It's been trained by humans. So learn to look for and spot those issues.
Aaron, could we move to our next slide? And one more, here we are. And this is what I sort of started with. And a good way to think about it is, are you going to use AI to ask for a recipe and then you're going to cook the dish? Are you going to cook the dish with your computer next to your stove or oven with giving AI information that can give you feedback to improve the cooking process? Or are you just going to have AI cook for you? We used to call it fishing with, fishing for, or fishing by, but now I've moved to cooking in my older age. I just wanted to throw that in, and we've got one more slide I want to show you because I always try to put a money slide on the bottom line to try to summarize what we've done. And with that, I think we are at the top of the hour. We had one question come in that I did want to maybe say a few words about, and the question is, can you elaborate how AI compliance ups its game? How will you relate it to decision-making in order to maximize performance? I see a lot of opportunities here. Think about third parties and your third-party due diligence. One of the things they emphasized at the conference this morning was the absolute more important need for robust third-party due diligence in 2025. Here we are still talking about that. But if you could embed your third-party due diligence with AI and you could move from a two-week, four-week to a two-day or two-hour robust process to help the business so that your due diligence could move at the speed of AI, that would be one way. We talked about communications and training, but you can also use AI to help identify potential risks and then put together potential risk management strategies so that when you find out you've lost one country because it's now sanctioned and you need to move to another geo region for suppliers, you have that information and you can present to the risk management committee on the board. So I just see lots of different uses. Nicole, I'm going to give you the final word since you're the star today.
Thanks, Tom. I would say that's actually a great place to end because I would say that truly the way to level up your compliance game with AI is kind of unlimited. This is a tool that is so drastically changing the way we work. And I think my favorite current use of AI is to use AI to enable me to help my clients give compliance education materials that are more specific to their company and therefore respectful of their employees. So I really think that's an interesting area. If you are interested on focusing more on how you can use AI in your workflow rather than the governance angle, I have, and part of a LinkedIn group, started a LinkedIn group that discusses just that. So feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn or at email. My information's in the slide deck, and I will invite you to continue the conversation with us there because there is a lot to learn out there and start playing. This is a tool that is here to stay. It is, at least until it is replaced by the next tool like VHS. Find something funny to ask ChatGPT today and see what it tells you.
The FCPA Compliance Report is the longest-running podcast in compliance, having been founded in 2012. Finally, I hope you'll check out my latest podcast, AI Today in 5, where I look at 5 stories of AI and compliance literally every day of the week. I know you'll enjoy this new podcast. Hope you'll join us again next week, where we look at the FCPA, where it has been in 2025, but more importantly, where it's going in 2026 and how Diligent can help you prepare for any twist, shape, or turn by the Department of Justice.
Two kinds of fishing out here. One for fish, one for your data. Hackers try to hook you, but Cisco Duo keeps every user and device protected. Cisco Duo. Fishing season is over. Learn more at duo.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.